Happy Monday, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rob with Shut Up and Grind. This is episode number 292. We're going to be talking about helping teens cope with life. So if you're new to the show, please like and share. You know, please support. If you're catching me on the replay, just let me know in the comments if you're catching me on the replay. If you guys have any show ideas that you want, you know, just let me know and I'll see what I can do to accommodate you. But, you know, we're all about helping people overcome obstacles, defy the odds, and get whatever it is that you want to get out of this life. So today, like I said, we're going to be speaking with Joey, and I didn't ask him how to pronounce his last name, so that's my bad. So we're going to bring Joey in.
It's a tricky one. It's Italian.
I know. As I was talking, I looked down. I was like, crap. Oh. <My breath. laughs> So you can go ahead and say what your name is.
Yes, I'm Joey Massio is how we pronounce it.
All right, Massio. Well, thank you for taking the time to come and share your story and your background with us. Much appreciated.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right, so just give us a quick background of you.
Yeah, of course. So I've run my own teen life coaching business now for 5 years. I specifically work with teens on building confidence, achieving goals, managing emotions. Before that, I was a middle school teacher and counselor for 7 years. Before that, I was a stage performer and comedian where I performed on hundreds of stages in front of thousands of people. My biggest claim to fame is being an actor at Disneyland, where I'm the only actor in Disney history to have played Darth Maul and the Mad Hatter.
Wow, okay. I didn't see all that coming. So what made you get out of the comedy business?
Oh, well, I got married. So that was super fun during my college years and whatnot. I was down in Hollywood and Orange County, Los Angeles, doing all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. And then I met my wife, and she was a food scientist with like a real job kind of thing. I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know. And we got together, and I just got this feeling. I'm like, I want to go become a teacher. And super glad I did, because when we had our first kid, he was born with a lung disease, and the health insurance really, really has been awesome.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And so what did you like best about teaching outside of the kids?
You know what? The ability to take something that most people perceived as boring and make it fun and engaging with the team. That was the best thing for me, was the ability to do that and go, okay, I know you guys think of like writing an essay is just the worst, because I was an English teacher and a theater teacher, but I'm like, let's actually take this from a different approach and let's put some power and story behind this. And the kids were like, oh man, that's actually a lot of fun to do that. So that was probably my favorite.
That's great. That's great. And so when did you make the transition into to becoming the teen coach?
Well, I had like halfway through my middle school years, I volunteered to be the teacher in the discipline office. And that's where I started coaching teens that would be sitting there waiting. They're in trouble for whatever reason. They're being bullied. I'd be in there and I started coaching them. And it was a lot of fun. And I was good at it. So I'm like, well, I want to start this on the side. And about the same time, I realized that becoming a life coach was an actual job that people were doing and making lots of money at. So I'm like, well, I'll start a private kind of thing, like a side hustle. So I started that, and it was going okay. And then the pandemic hit and my business went through the roof, and I was a teacher in California. So they sent us all home for a year and a half, and I was doing a lot of stuff online. But at that point I was already the teacher in the discipline office. I didn't have all but one class. So I managed that, and I started doing some positive behavior, emotional support for the whole school virtually. And then as my business was taken off, I realized, hey, I can kind of take what I'm doing virtually with the whole school here, and I can kind of apply it to what I'm doing with my business. And I developed a gamified mindset training app for teens. And that's my main business now that I run. And I left teaching 2 years ago now. No, 3 years ago now. Yeah.
Okay. Like it. So we'll dive deeper into that in a minute. So like I started this show very similarly, you know, happened, pandemic hit, and, you know, being a gym owner, it's, you know, we all got shut down too. So that was a rough patch. And But what I noticed from joining, like I joined different masterminds and stuff because I had nothing else to do outside of teaching the virtual classes. So like, let me learn stuff. So I started joining the masterminds. And I noticed a lot of people were really bad at introducing themselves. Really, really bad. You know, like ask something like, tell me about yourself. And they're like, you know, it was just a train wreck. And every Zoom call I was on, I was like, let me just start inboxing these people and say, hey, if you want, I can help you out with that intro. And I was like, hey, I can help you out with that intro. And it just turned into a thing. And I ended up creating a program called Speak About Yourself Out Loud. You know, just helping people take their inner stories and bring them to light. You know, and I just share that because it's relevant with the teens. Because a lot of teens, now I know they're not all created equal, but a lot of teens bottle everything inside. You know, like, and I do that with my track team. It's like we're at the tail end of the indoor season now, but like at each, the last 10 minutes of every class, I would have them each get up in front of everyone and just say something about themselves. Like what's something good that happened to you today? Like, what was your biggest struggle? But just to get them used to expressing themselves, you know, then it just shows up in their everyday life.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. That story is huge. Like, you know, the ability to talk about yourself and introduce yourself. I cover a lot of that stuff. I love your angle on it. I cover that when I like coach kids on social skills, right? The ability to like talk to other people. They don't ever share their story, and they should, because their story is awesome.
Yes. Yeah, and there's nothing to be afraid of. No. You know, like there's such a big fear of judgment and fear of rejection out there. Like I was on someone else's show 2 weeks ago. And she said to me, she's like, you know, because I share all parts of my story, the good, the bad, the ugly. And she's like, how did you build up the courage to just say these things? I said, because I don't care what people think about me. I'm like, I am who I am. You know, some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. But I am who I am. And just getting people to that point where they can express themselves in that manner and just truly be themselves, because it's actually more stressful trying to be someone you're not.
Yeah. And I would say to add on that you love who you are. Like, yes. Not only do you not care what other people think, but you think the best things about yourself from what it sounds like.
Yes.
I think a lot of teens I coach, they try that line on me, Rob, or like, oh, I don't care what people think. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, hold on. First off, you do, because you didn't believe that when you said it. Second off, you don't believe good things about yourself, which is why you're worried that other people are going to agree with you, you know, when you don't think, you know, the best things about yourself. But if you just think, yeah, I know I'm awesome, right? Like, not in like the arrogant, cocky way, but just like, hey, you know what, flaws and all, I'm freaking awesome.
Yep.
You know, that's when you truly don't care what other people say, because you know they're wrong, and that's okay.
Yes, I actually have a tank top that says I'm awesome on the back of it.
Yeah. Oh, I want one.
Like, I tell people, like, you can't love anyone else if you don't love yourself. Like, no. you can't. Like, you're not fully giving them all of you. You can't. No. And people think it sounds cocky or selfish or whatever, but that's not the case. You know, it's like, that's not the case. Like you, it has to be from within. You know, like, if you're only externally driven, then the internal part's never going to come.
Yeah, no, 100%, right? You need that internal belief. And it's easier to get, but also harder to get at the same time. I don't know how both of those things are true. But it's an easy thing to do, but the hard part is identifying where that weakness is coming from, where your self-doubt lives.
Yes.
And when I can identify that story, and I love this, right? What you have up here, your true power lies in your story. We tell the worst stories about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think they're just facts.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I tell people, you are exactly what you think you are. Yeah. That's what it boils down to. No more, no less. Like, I actually had to, I almost got in trouble at the high school where I coach it, because, like I said, I'm a straight shooter, you know, and like half the team is saying, you know, they struggle with stress, anxiety, depression, and all that stuff. And those things are real things, but you got to call it what it truly is. All of those things stem from fear, right? And you said it in your video that I watched earlier, you have to identify the source, you know? So I was talking with them, I went, okay, so you're anxious about X, Y, Z, why? What is it about that that makes you feel that? Said that's how you end up taking control of it. You know, so just to simply say, I had anxiety. Like you're doing yourself a disservice. Like, you know, feeling anxious, it's a feeling, it's an emotion. You know, I said, so we have to find out what's triggering that emotion, and then we can help you get to the other side of it. You know, like you were saying, identifying the triggers.
Yeah, because there's so many sentences in our head we just take as fact. Right. I have anxiety. And I'm like, all right, well, unless a doctor has diagnosed you with clinical anxiety, I don't know what I have anxiety means. Like, you tell me what it means. And then I start hearing more of their story about it, which means, well, I mean, I feel super nervous when I go talk to people. I have social anxiety, for example. Yep. I'm like, okay, I too feel super nervous when I go talk to new people as well. Does that mean that I have anxiety? Right. Like, what is that like? And then why do you feel nervous when you're talking to people? Well, and usually it boils down to they're going to think I'm weird, right? And they're going to, you know, think I'm different in a bad way. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so what? Like, what's wrong with that? And usually they go, Joey, I just told you what's wrong with it. They think I'm weird. That's the thing that's wrong. That's the thing I'm trying to avoid. And I'm like, okay, but why? Why? And they're like, because then people won't like me, you know, or I won't have any friends. Okay, well, hold on. Let's take that. I won't have any friends. Is that true? If you talk, you stutter, because I had a stutter in middle school and high school, right? And you stutter, and somebody's like, oh, buh, 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 and makes fun of you, and then, oh, Joey's so weird. And then I'm like, oh, no. Does that mean you're not going to have any friends? And they go, well, no, like, I mean, I do have friends, and I have friends who stutter as well. And they start to realize that story they were holding on to with both hands and 2 feet is baseless, is at least weaker than they believe it was.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, that's what's behind your anxiety. You think your performance here in front of all these people is going to lead to you not having any friends and being a social outcast. And when you frame it, the story that way, they're like, that's kind of ridiculous. I'm like, I mean, I'm glad you said it, because that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So my track team, my girls 4x4 team, we just had the state meet weekend before last. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think we were seated 10th or 11th, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And so myself and the other coach, we said to the girls, all right, look, in order for you to make it to New England's, you're going to have to run in the teens, right? So their PR was 4 minutes and 20 seconds. I said, so you guys got to get about 4:15, 4:16 if you want to crack the top six. And they're like, oh my God, they're like, isn't that a lot? I was like, yeah, now go do it. Right? I kept it. That's the bus. I said, if the four of you trim 1 second, like that's all I'm asking you for, 1 second. It's nothing to stress over. Just go out there and run 1 second faster. And they ended up running 4:16. And we got the New England's the Saturday.
Oh, but that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spent this whole season, like the first month was the hardest, is getting the kids to believe in themselves. Mm. By the tail end of the season, I'd be like, so-and-so, are you ready? And they'd look me right in the eyes and be like, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready. No more twitching of the hands and all this other stuff. I spent the entire season telling them how good they are. Because going back to what I said earlier, you're only as good as you believe you are.
That's true. There's a book. Your story just reminded me of a book. It's called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. Great book, especially for, you know, track coaches. But he talks about when the 4 minute mile was first broken.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard that story? Yeah, right?
Roger Bannister.
Right, yeah, and it was broken, and then apparently after that, like, a bunch of people started doing it, and he was like, what changed? Because the only thing that changed is people started going, oh, it's possible.
Yes.
Oh, okay, and then they started pushing themselves for it, like towards it, and you telling your team, no, it's totally possible, now go do it, right? Oh, okay, it's possible. It's the same thing. Oh, I'm awesome. Like, for me, my journey to this work started when I was in middle school, okay? I have a pretty big head. And I had an even bigger head back then because my body was smaller and I had hair on top of it, right? And so there's a group of boys, they were in eighth grade, I was in seventh grade, and they noticed that my head was big. And they compared me to the dude from the McDonald's commercial. I don't know if you remember seeing this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Right? You know, he's called Mac Tonight, singing about how you need a Big Mac tonight. But they just said, oh, dude, that kid reminds me of the guy from the McDonald's commercial, the guy with the moonhead. Hey, this kid's Moonhead. And that was my nickname from them. Hey, what's up, Moonhead? And they started to call me that, and I hated it. I'd get this pit, like a nervous pit in my stomach, because I knew I had to see them every day when I walked home, because he always hung out right there when I left. And they go, what's up, Moonhead? Go get me a Big Mac. You know, oh, get out of here, Moonhead. And it was the worst. But the worst part about it was I started to let them write my story that, oh, man, I am not awesome. I'm weird looking. I'm ugly. Why would anybody even want to be friends with me, let alone even date me one day? Like, and then one day it all changed for me, because I heard one of them before they saw me. I heard one of them turn to the other and go, shut up, twig. And I was like, oh, yeah, that guy is sickly skinny. Oh, and the other kid, he's really big. And the ringleader who came up with the name Moonhead, he's really hairy for a 13-year-old, right? Like a full-on mustache. And then all these new thoughts and all these new stories about the world hit me. And I'm like, man, we all look different in some way, shape, or form. This is just how these guys communicate with each other. It doesn't mean anything about me. They just find a perceived flaw and hang a lantern on it. That's all. That's how they do it. And they still think they're cool in a way. So I'm like, wait a minute, why can't I? And all of a sudden my new story was, yeah, my head is big and I'm still freaking awesome. And when they saw me, they're like, what's up, Moonhead? I'm like, hey guys. And I started to respond.
Yep.
And it threw them off and they were like, get out of here. But eventually it became this thing where they're like, hey, what's up, Moonhead? I'm like, what's up? You guys want a Big Mac? I can get you one. Right? And they chuckle, laugh. And then that was it. And it kind of became less of a thing. And they stopped focusing so much because they probably weren't getting the response that they wanted out of me. Instead, it was just kind of like this friendly banter. And that was it. And that stuck with me all throughout middle school and high school, where I'm like, wait, I can just rewrite the stories in my head about myself. And Robert, for a while, I thought I was just cheating the system. I thought I was just doing something that I shouldn't be doing, until I found life coaching and cognitive behavioral therapy and all this other stuff. And I'm like, no, this is reframing. And it's a viable, powerful skill.
Absolutely. See, I deal with that here in the gym too. Like when I first got to this location, you know, people kind of just did their own thing. Like the workouts would be put up on the television and people would just, like, nothing wrong with the workouts themselves, but the people weren't pushing themselves. You know, they'd get like the smallest, lightest weights available. Mm-hmm. And just over time, I started challenging them. All right, look, go up to the purple now, go up to the green, go up to the red. And now seven, eight months later, like they're swinging kettlebells like five times heavier than what they would have, you know, 7 months ago. And that was just from putting in the belief that you're strong enough to do this. You know, so this works on all levels. They're like, well, I don't want to hurt myself. I'm like, you're not going to hurt yourself. As long as you stick to the form, believe in yourself, and you're going to be fine. Right. And so, and that doesn't matter if you're working with middle school kids or elderly.
It's all the same.
Like I have people in here in their 60s pushing 70 and they're still dragging the heavy sled. They're still swinging the heavy kettlebells. And it all depends on your own belief system. Whereas with me, excuse me, I'm under the belief that I can literally do anything. No matter what it is, I can pull it off. And I'm not afraid to fail. Right. And getting the kids to buy into that, it's a tough thing. They're worried about embarrassment, people laughing and all that other stuff. I'm like, no, like keep your eye on the prize. Don't worry about if you don't make it today. That's fine. We're going to train up. We'll try again tomorrow. If that doesn't work, we'll train up tomorrow. Then eventually you're going to get it. And then once you get it, you're going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that's how progress works.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's what, when I work with teens and teach confidence, right? Self-confidence. You know, I say, people come to me and say, Joey, I want to be more confident. Help me be more confident. And I'm like, what you're actually saying when you say that is, Joey, help me never fail. Like, help me be good at all conversations. Help me be the best football player, the best track runner, like whatever. And I'm like, because confidence, my definition is the ability to be successful. And it's useless. Because it only works in things you can already do. Yep. right? Like, I'm confident I can teach middle school. I did that for 7 years. I'm confident I can do a kickflip on a skateboard. I've done it 100 times, right? And kids are always like, you can do a kickflip? I'm like, I know I'm old, but I was around when skateboarding was invented, okay? But I'm like, what you are asking for is self-confidence, which I define as the ability to fail successfully. And they're like, okay, what does that mean, fail successfully? And I'm like, well, let's talk about failure first. I don't even believe that's a real thing. I just believe, kind of like how you described it, was to me, my drama-free definition of failure is when my expectations and reality didn't match. That's it. I expected this thing happened. That was it. Failing. Yeah, exactly. Failing successfully is not taking any perceived failure personally. I'm making it mean something. I love that you're like, we'll go about it again tomorrow. Because when we fail, we go, well, I'm never going to be able to do this. No amount of practice is going to help me. But that coaching of, well, just go about it again tomorrow. Like, come on. You know, or that embarrassment is, oh, this means I'm less than other people because I said a joke and nobody laughed. That's what that means, is that I'm not funny and will never be funny. That's a personal judgment. Rather than just going, oh, that joke wasn't funny. All right. Or that joke didn't land right now. Right. That's why nobody laughed. But the reason why you shrink and you play small is because now you have a personal judgment about yourself. Well, I'm an idiot. I'm a stupid moron who tells lame jokes. That is not having self-confidence. So self-confidence is the ability to fail successfully.
Along those same lines, one of the most powerful words out there is yet. Because yet can change the entire context. Like, people will say, I can't swing that kettlebell. I'm like, finish it. They're like, yet. Like, yet. Just because you can't do it today, just like you said, you don't want to put the period on the end of that sentence. No. Like, I can't do it yet. You know, with my jumpers, you know, one of them, he's closing in on 20 feet in the long jump, and he's only a sophomore. So, like, his goal at the beginning of the season was, you know, to hit 20. We were close. He got 19, 10, and 3/4. Right? So,
wow.
So he was so close, so like little over an inch. But anyway, I told him, I said, listen, I said, this is not a failure. Like, when you started training, you were jumping 17. I said, so you improved almost 3 feet. Like, and we still have outdoor to go. All right? I said, so this was not a failure. Because, like, I tell the kids to set lofty goals, right? And I know some therapists disagree with this, because they're like, you know, you want to get smaller wins. It's like, yes, you can get the smaller wins, but that leads to complacency. So it's like, yeah, you can divide the bigger goal into smaller pieces, but, like, you know, we wanted his sights on 20 feet, and reaching for 20, he improved by almost 3 feet. So if we just set it for 18, he's not gonna push as hard. But then you can say, well, you can always just reset it again to 19. Yeah, but if we train for 20, he's gonna blow by 18. You know, so that's my approach with it.
No, that's awesome. I love that, because it's like, you know, I get the concept of the smaller wins, right? That's great and all that, but you gotta know where you're going. You gotta know where you're headed, because I think the danger is, I got the smaller win, I'm good.
Exactly. Exactly. That's where that complacency comes in. And that's the worst thing. Like, I do a lot of obstacle races, and people are like, you know, you're addicted to these things. I said, no, I said, I'm just as human as the rest of you. It's like, I need something to work towards. Like, I'm already in shape, so that's not my motivating factor. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm already in shape. I can play all the sports I want to play at 49, almost 50. I said, my thing is I want something to work towards. Like, I have a race coming up the end of April. I have another one in May. Like, I basically have one every single month, you know, and I still compete. I still compete in track meets, you know, in the old man age bracket. But, like, I need something beyond just weight and measurements. And, like, I need something beyond the superficial. So that works for me. And even with the young kids, right? I'll tell you another quick one. I was working with a middle school here in Warwick. I'm in Rhode Island, by the way. So a middle school. And so I walk in to go work with what do you call it, the discipline group?
Oh, so, the discipline office. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a different name for this program, but like it was kind of degrading to the kids, number one. But I get in there to be a guest speaker, and the director, she points out this kid, and she's like, "You gotta watch out for that one, right?" And I was like, "Isn't that kid like 12?" I'm like, "Why do I have to watch out for a 12-year-old, right?" So anyway, I'm like, so when we break off into the focus groups, put him at my table, and so I just started talking to him. You know, he's trying to slouch and trying to act all cool and stuff, and I was like, "I want to get into how this kid thinks, right?" So fast forward. He just didn't like to be told what to do. He's one of those, right? So I was like, all right, I want you to come up with a craft that you can do with these two. I said, but you lead it, right? And so I let him lead it, and he did it beautifully, right? So then we broke off into sports, and we were playing basketball. So I took captain of one team, and I made him the captain of the other team. And when I tell you, he was like – he has leadership qualities. So like when someone that has leadership qualities and they're suppressed, you know, like that goes against their natural instincts. I said, so by empowering this kid, he stepped right up. Like you wouldn't have even known that he was in the behavioral group. But so it's like, you know, you have to find out what drives these kids and get to the heart of what it is that they're dealing with and what they want to do.
Yeah, because then they connect a personal story to it, right? They connect it to something rather than having an adult do it for them.
Yes.
Right? Whenever I talk to parents about working with their teens, I only coach teens, but occasionally I'll speak at events or whatever. And my teen business is called Sidekick to Hero, because the sidekick or the hero in the story is someone who rises up to change their story. Sidekicks have the ability, but they don't, right? But when I talk to parents, I call it going from villain to mentor. And this sounds like what you just did with that 12-year-old kid. You went from villain, right, to being a mentor in his life. And the biggest difference between a villain and a mentor is that a mentor lets the student take charge, make decisions,
yes,
fail. He lets them do that. Villains in almost any story is always trying to control everybody around them to get them to do certain things. But the mentor is like, hey, look, here's the best way to do it. You choose.
Yes.
And kids love that.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. So getting back to my track team, like again, the first couple weeks, you know, like I said, a couple parents were calling the principal, calling the athletic director. Cause it was, like I said, before we went live, I told you I have an aggressive style. That's just, it's just how I am, you know? And so those first 2 weeks, like I went hard on them, like really, really hard. But going into like week three, parents were like, we don't know what you guys are doing, but so-and-so loves coming to practice. Like so-and-so loves, and like we would come up here to the gym on weekends and we would do team training here. You know, so like I put them through like strength and conditioning stuff, because like not every track coach has a fitness background. So a lot of the kids didn't really know how to squat. They didn't know how to lunge. They couldn't hold a 30-second plank. But like now, 3 months later, they're like a whole different squad. It's like they're walking with their chest up. They're less afraid to speak. They're believing in themselves. And so like every kid has it. Just got like you, going back to what you were saying about being a mentor. It's like you got to find out what they have inside and unlock it. Yeah. And that's what we spent those first 2 weeks doing. I said to the other coach, Gabby, I said to her, I said, we need to see what these kids are made of. I said, we're going to push them and we're going to push them to the brink. I said, we're not going to break them, but we're going to bend them. Yeah. I said, and we're going to find which ones can hang in. And probably like eight of the kids quit. But the ones that stayed all had like very big personal bests for this season.
That's awesome. Yeah. Being challenged is huge. And that's probably one, like, I'm not going to say one of those statements where it's like, this is what's wrong with today's, you know, youth, right? Because I think there's lots of things that have been wrong with lots of youth in every generation.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing slowing down youth today is probably not being challenged, not challenging themselves because of the screens that are accessible today.
Yes.
I'd love to hear your, you know, like your aggressive approach to screens, because for me, every single teen that I coach It's, well, I want to be doing more. Well, why aren't you? I don't know why. We look at their day. You realize you're spending this much time not pursuing your goals, and instead you're on YouTube, video games, or social media. Do you realize that? These things aren't inherently bad, but as a replacement for challenging themselves in the real world, that's where I feel like it's really setting them back.
Well, I encourage them to, if you're going to go on your phone, do something that's going to better yourself. You know, so like I said, the first week, again, going back to what the track team, I said, every one of you, I said, you all have one of these. I said, you have access to YouTube. You have access to Google. I said, you should be watching videos of your event. Like if you're a runner, watch videos on running drills and running form and breathing and cadence and all that stuff. You know, if you're a thrower, so on and so forth. I'm like, immerse yourself in education. Right? You're just going to watch people doing stupid dances on TikTok. That's not going to do anything to advance your life. And I'm not saying there isn't a time and a place to unwind. Right. I said, but you're here. You're doing the sport. I'm like, Coach Gab and I are putting you guys through the ringer physically. But you have to become the student of your event. I was like, you have to become the student. I was like, I got to where I got to in track and field. And again, this was before the internet. But like, I used to ride my bike to the library. Remember the big old projectors with the big wheel on them?
Yeah.
Right? And I would find track and field videos, and I would study the long jump. I would study the triple jump and the high jump. It's like I studied all that stuff, and I immersed myself in it. So I'm telling the kids, right, you have a phone, use it to better yourself. Like you guys have access to more information now than ever before. Yeah. And you guys are wasting it away on nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the their main comeback is, well, it's relaxation. You don't believe in relaxation or unwinding? I'm like, no, I totally do. But is how you're using it actually fitting into that category? Or is it fitting into the category of distracting? You know, like, because unwinding looks different, right? Like unwinding is after you bike down to the library and looked at the big reel and projector that, and then, or whatever, then you come home and then for 30 minutes, maybe an hour, oh, you know what? I want to play some Clash Royale or something, or I'm going to play some Minecraft, or I'm going to, and you do that because you had a really hard working day and you accomplished a lot in real world, right? And then you're like, all right, well now let me just relax. But they're not doing it in that way. Most of them aren't. Most of them, they took the garnish, right? Like social media was supposed to be a garnish, right? Or screens, just a little something on your plate just for decoration. And they made that their whole plate. That's my whole meal now, is just that garnish. And they're not getting the metaphorical nutrients or other things from everything else that's supposed to be part of their life.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's let's shift gears because like time flies, man. All right. So let's get deeper into your business.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to know? Where should we start?
All right. So you said that you typically just work within the schools, like just directly with the kids.
Yeah. So my business, right. It's called Sidekick to Hero, and I'm a one-on-one coach. I have private clients that I meet with. They're all across the country. But what I did, it was about 2 years ago. I'm like, man, there's gotta be a way not just to scale my business, but to scale the number of kids that can actually reach. And I'm like, well, I want to meet them where they are in a format that they're used to and they already like. And so I was like, what if I could design a platform that looked and felt like a video game / YouTube that was gamified, right? But that taught them these powerful mental resilience skills. So I had this idea. Me and my wife had just sold our house in California because I just left the teaching industry. And we're like, well, we can take all this cash and we can put it into buying a new home. But I'm like, or we can take all this cash and invest it in ourselves, in this business. So I took that cash and I paid a professional gaming development company to design a web app from the ground up called Sidekick to Hero, where the teens have short, high energy, entertaining, humorous, story-led videos that teach them a powerful principle and then gives them a challenge to go do in real life. And then they come back to the app and they day I did it, and then they get awarded XP and coins for doing the challenge, doing the videos. You have a customizable avatar. I have a weekly live stream that I host with them, where all the teams are in the chat and we're chatting, and there's giveaways every month of gift cards, and it's a really fun community kind of subscription-based model that parents sign their teens up for, and they can binge watch all these videos. My podcast is on there. They get points for all of it, and it teaches them skills in the four hero arenas, which is an acronym that spells headspace, emotions, relationships, and objectives. And I feel if you can become powerful in each one of those four arenas, you can really rock life. It's the way you think, it's the way you feel, it's the way you interact with others, and the way you interact with your goals. And it's been a blast. It launched last summer officially, and there's been a huge, like, powerful response to teens. And I work with teens all over the place, so anybody can sign up for it. Right now, mostly it's private, as in where just a mom, you know, a dad can sign up their teen. I'm getting into the homeschool community as well. A bunch of homeschool parents are using it as a curriculum for mental health. And then also I'm working right now with some residential treatment centers for teens who were in major crisis mode, but now they're living at this residential treatment center for a couple months. I'm getting some contracts going with them so they can get access to it as well.
Okay, sounds good. That's great. Yeah. I gotta connect you with Joanne Kaminsky.
Connect me.
Yeah, she's been on my show a couple times. Like, she's an online tutor.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and well, she's an online tutor, but now she teaches other teachers how to become an online tutor. Mm. Yeah, nice. Like, I spoke at her event last year. It was it was virtually, but I want to say there was like 800 tutors on there. Saying, oh, wow, I was nice. just on about storytelling and all that stuff. Mm. But yeah, it should probably be a good resource for you.
Yeah, man, connect us. I love making connections. I love networking.
Awesome. All right, so give us some final words here. So I like to give people a direct question at the end. So there's a teen, they're struggling, but they're afraid to ask for help. What do you say to that team?
Well, I would say, think about why you're afraid. What are you really afraid of? Are you afraid of the actual communicating with an adult, right? I don't know how to do that part. Or are you afraid of what you're going to have to do in order to make the change that you want? 9 times out of 10, I mean, it could be either, but it's that one. Like, I'm afraid to do the thing, right? And that fear is going to stop you from becoming the person that you want to be. It's going to be uncomfortable. No, whatever you choose to do, stay the same or to make the change, they're both uncomfortable. It's an illusion that one option is not or is comfortable. That's an illusion. Either you're going to experience the discomfort of making the change and growing and talking to new people or doing the thing you have to do. Either you're going to experience that, or you're going to experience the discomfort of not changing, looking around at yourself and being like, I wish I was different. I wish I made that change. Both are uncomfortable. You can pick whatever you want, but if I were you, I'd rather pick the discomfort that leads to the growth that I want to see.
See, and I want to illustrate that for you, right? I agree 100% with everything you just said, but I want to give you an illustration.
Yeah.
My mom had very, very bad knee, right? Very bad knee. She's 72, but she looked 92 every time she tries to get up, right? And so I said to her one day, I'm like, have you had an MRI done? She's like, oh, the doctor already said I'm going to need a knee replacement. I said, then what are you waiting for? And she's like, I'm not going through that. I was like, with advancements in medicine now, more and more people are living into their 90s. Okay. And like, you're 72. So if you make it to 90, you want to live 18 more years feeling like that. I was like, just let that marinate. And yeah. So a couple weeks had gone by, and she's like, I called the doctor. He's like, you know, we're going to have a meeting with the surgeon. So she ended up having it on December 5th. And we were talking the other day. I was like, so how's that knee feeling? And she's like, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it. You know, because like, again, to illustrate your point, I said, you can be in pain for the rest of your life, or you can be in pain for a few months, but heal. right? You'll be healing. At the end of that pain, you are going to be better, you know? And so when I'm talking with, it doesn't matter if it's kids or adults, I use that illustration or even my own. Like, I've had 7 of my own surgeries, you know, but like I said, I like to push myself, right? It's sometimes I break, right? It is what it is, but I bounce back from it every single time. Yeah. But I tell people, it's like, you can go through the pain of discipline and get in the best shape of your life, or you're going to have the pain of complacency and you're not going to change any.
Yep.
So again, to your point, that's spot on. Like, you have to go through something to get something.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, final words.
Man, just remember, you guys are awesome. And keep being awesome. Your true power lies in your story. It's 100% true. If you guys are podcast listeners, I do have a podcast just for teens. It's called Sidekick to Hero. It's short episodes that start with a story, usually humorous, but teaches a powerful principle. It's called Secrets for an Awesome Life, and it helps teens make their life more awesome.
That's great. Thank you once again for taking the time to come out and share. This is a great conversation. Like I said, like every guest that comes on, I glance down, it's like, crap, it's over. It's like it just goes by so fast. When the conversation just flows, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I like that format. But don't sign off just yet. Just going to do a quick outro, and then when I give you some connections. All right, I'll see you in a minute. All right, so that was Joey. So if you happen to catch in the middle, go back to the beginning and listen to the entire episode. Like, he dropped a lot of knowledge there. And, you know, kids are fed a lot of nonsense nowadays, especially via social media. And this is a chance to give them something positive, you know. So actually, you know what? Let me bring them back on real quick. Say the name of your program again.
Yeah, it's called Sidekick to Hero. If you go to joeymassio.com, that's where you can find it.
There we go. All right. Thank you. All right. I didn't want to butcher the name. So I'll be back tomorrow, and I'll be back on Friday as well. So there's 3 shows this week. And thanks for tuning in. Take care.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up and grind.